We'll call this regular session of the Springfield Planning Commission to order. If you'll please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any adjustments to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on. Business from the audience? None? Okay, we have before us tonight two public hearings. These are both quasi-judicial public hearings. And I'll turn it over to our legal counsel to describe the quasi-judicial process.
The hearing tonight is characterized as a de novo quasi-judicial hearing. Excuse me. Quasi-judicial means that certain due processes, procedural rights are associated with these decision-making processes. These rights include the right to notice, to present evidence, to have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision maker. The record in this matter consists of the application and any supporting information, any staff report and supporting documents, and any testimony and documentary evidence admitted during this hearing. By statute, you have the right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You do not have to give a reason for the request, but you must make the request before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record may be held open. I'm sorry, this is further away. Feels far away. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record may be held open for an additional period of time to allow other parties an opportunity to respond to the new evidence. You also have the right to request a continuance of the hearing. A continuance is a discretionary with the Planning Commission. The party requesting it must show that prejudice to his or her rights will not be cured by merely holding the record open. The procedure for tonight includes the applicant testimony, the testimony by those in favor, the testimony by those neutral, the testimony by those opposed, staff summary, rebuttal by applicant, the close of public hearing, and a discussion of policy issues in compliance with the adopted plans. Any person who participated in the hearing may appeal the commission's decision to the city council. Please consult an attorney regarding the deadline for appeal and the form of appeal. The Oregon land use laws require that the planning commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to the matter and allow any person to challenge the commission for bias. Generally, a conflict of interest involves the situation where the decision maker, his or her family or business would benefit or suffer by his or her decision. An ex parte contact includes communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. At this time, it is appropriate for the Planning Commission to open the hearing.
Okay, we will open the hearing at this time. The first hearing is discretionary use. Applicant requests discretionary use approval of an existing water utility installation off South 5th Street and Central Boulevard, Springfield Utility Board. Commissioners, at this time, we need to declare any conflicts of interest or disclosure of ex parte communication.
I have none.
I have none.
I have none.
Okay. Okay, so at this time we'll proceed with the staff report. Andy?
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners. The site in question is just south of us here. If you can see through a picture window or something, the facility is just on top of the hillside, on top of the hill in the Lyman Heights neighborhood, due south of us here at City Hall. And the facility is about 7.4 acres. It was recently, the south half of it was recently annexed to the city, so it's entirely within the city limits currently. The site contains an existing 2 million gallon steel reservoir tank, some abandoned open concrete pits that were formerly reservoirs, a pump house, and some associated water utility infrastructure. There's also a radio tower installation, actually, that's used by the city public works operations for voice radio also on the site as well. So that's not subject to any changes with this application. The reason that this is coming forward as a discretionary use is the site is entirely zoned, currently zoned low-density residential. It adjoins other low-density residential properties and also some property that the city owns, the Booth Kelly site, which is Booth Kelly Mixed Use District. There's a portion of the site, the northern fringe of the site, extends into the Booth Kelly refinement plan area, and so would be designated Booth Kelly Mixed Use District. And staff just wanted to clarify that this zoning designation, as well as low density residential, in both circumstances, the high impact public utility facility would be subject to a discretionary use review. So staff feels that the zoning and the zoning designation are not critical to this site. It's not important to get the zoning in alignment with the designation on the, for the northern, I guess, edge of the site. I'll just show an updated view. Just a couple pictures of the site for context. It's just about the last destination on the end of the road on South 5th Street and Central Boulevard. I believe there may be one or two residences south of this site that are kind of on the fringe of the neighborhood. It's a gravel lane, essentially, that transitions from city limits to Lane County jurisdiction along the site frontage. So therefore, it's a joint jurisdictional review for permits associated with any of the frontage work that needs to be done. The applicant's proposing to change the location of the driveway and also to close the existing driveway, do fencing improvements, and then we'll need access along the route that you see in the lower left corner there in order to access the site with equipment and machinery. So staff has summarized the criteria of discretionary use approval in the staff report. It's an existing facility. It's been operating for decades. The tank has been in place since about 1961. There is a proposed 3 million gallon tank that would be sited on this in this facility, along with a new water line to connect to South 6th Street that essentially provides additional service and capacity to residents in this area of Springfield. So it is a critical infrastructure project. However, due to the zoning, it does require a discretionary use approval before the site plan review and accompanying land use approvals can be issued for this site. And that's why the applicant is before you with this request this evening. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about the application, and the applicant's representative is here too, and will probably fill out some of the details that I've kind of covered in my presentation. So.
Okay. Any other questions for staff? Hearing none, we'll now hear testimony from the applicant. State your name.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Rick Satry with Shermer Satry Group. Our office address is 375 West 4th Avenue in Eugene, Suite 201. I'm here tonight representing the applicant, Springfield Utility Board Water Department. It's always good to see you again. I appreciate the opportunity to share a few moments here. And I want to say thanks to staff for considering and processing and making a recommendation of approval on the discretionary use. As staff indicated, this is a permitted use in the plan designation and the zoning district. It's permitted contingent on approval of a discretionary use application, which is before you this evening. Should note also there are three other concurrent planning applications. This is the only one that requires a public hearing. The others are type 2 applications with public notice and staff decision. That is site plan review, hillside development overlay, and tree felling. There's no shortage of applications on this particular piece of real estate. As staff indicated, this is a a critical piece of public infrastructure, part of our community's public water supply. It's been there for a very long time. The two open reservoirs have been long abandoned. This essentially the plan that Springfield Utility Board is seeking to implement with approval of this suite of applications is to make some immediate improvements to the water distribution system and also lay the groundwork for potential future improvements. As staff indicated, the immediate improvements are the demolition and removal of the long abandoned open reservoirs, the development of a pad site for a potential future larger above ground water reservoir. That pad site will be pretty much, if you're looking at the air photo, pretty much due south of the existing tank will be the location of the future tank. It's critical that that southern of the two open reservoirs be removed to help create that pad site. Along with that, the entrance will be relocated and improved from a visibility and access public safety perspective. There will also be a new pump house installed, new pumps and security and infrastructure. And as staff indicated, the new supply and delivery pipelines from the reservoir northward connecting into the city's distribution system. So thank you for your consideration. We certainly concur with the staff recommendation of approval. Love the fact that there are no conditions. As the applicant's representative, we're available if you have any questions at all. Thank you.
Okay, we have one request to address the commission. This is a neutral position. Would Richard Terry please come to the podium, state your name and address, please, for the commission, for the record.
Hi, I'm Richard Terry. I live at 503 Union. I'm adjacent to this project that's going on. I just had a couple of questions, and this is the easiest place to get the answers. Is it possible to see a site plan of where things are going?
Well, you know, I believe that it's a little early in the process, isn't it? We don't have a site plan for this.
Staff does.
Staff does.
Under separate cover, the site plan review was submitted for the site, and so it is available for review either online or in person in City Hall.
Oh, okay. And then I'm just curious if they're going to take down those beautiful cedar trees that are there, that have been there for a very long time. And the site plan would tell me part of that. I wouldn't be here asking the questions. And the third question I have, since I live right there and I'm watching them work, I noticed they're wearing masks and they're containing some dust coming out of this. And I'm curious what that's about, what kind of dust I should watch for.
Okay. And we'll have staff respond.
Okay. Answer. Okay.
Yeah.
In response, thank you for your questions. First off, and I guess just for the record, we're happy to share the site plan with you. I can advise that the applicant is proposing to remove most of the trees from the interior of the site, and I believe the cedar trees that you're referring to along the Central Boulevard frontage there are also identified for removal. The reason for that is because of site grading and the access that's going to be directly off of the sort of that corner, the 90 degree angle in sort of the west corner of the site. That's where the driveway is going to be derived from. The site grading, access, and work needed to remove the concrete structures is going to undermine the tree roots, as I understand it, and so they will not be viable. They're right along the edge, I believe, of the sort of the western edge of the concrete structure that needs to be entirely demolished and removed. Regarding the issue of dust, it's my understanding that there is asbestos that was used in the some of the lining of the reservoir tank, and I believe that the applicant has obtained LRAPA, which is the Regional Air Pollution Authority, permits to do asbestos abatement. So there's some hazardous materials on the site. I don't know the timing of that, if they've all been removed, and maybe the applicant's representative might be more knowledgeable of that, but I was aware that there was another process that they were undertaking to deal with some asbestos on the site.
Okay. So,
and I don't believe that it's going to become, you know, generate airborne, you know, contaminants or anything. It's just that the nature of the materials contained asbestos, and that was the nature of how things were formed back in the day, I guess. So, I don't know. Do you have any more information on that, Rick?
Thanks, Andy. Very briefly, we have not been involved in the LRAPA permit, but it is my understanding that they do have a permit for the demolition work. With respect to the trees, the site plan review application, as well as the tree removal permit, does document, we did do a tree survey, so we've documented existing trees, species, health, condition, size. We've noted which are being removed and the reasons why. These are not subject to tonight's hearing, but just FYI. And then we are replacing all of the trees. And I can't tell you how many we're removing and how many we're replacing, but where we are removing them, we are replacing them with native species, a mix of coniferous and deciduous. For the most part, they're going to be near the perimeter of the property, where a lot of the trees we're removing are from the interior. So it's a combination of meeting code standards for screening, but at the same time balancing openness for security and police protection. And also, there was a sight line with respect to the city's radio tower that we couldn't put trees everywhere because of the radio tower. So if anyone does want to know, all of that information is available with planning staff in great detail with the site review and the tree felling permit.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Okay, at this time, hearing no requests for continuation of the public hearing, or extension of the written record. We certainly can close the public hearing. Do we need a motion to do that, legal counsel? Okay.
I motion that we close the public hearing.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Moved by Director Dean, seconded by Director Moe to close the public hearing. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, public hearing is closed.
Are the directors?
Commissioners.
We know it's you.
One board, we're all board directors.
We knew
one or the other. okay, so we have deliberation. Do we have any questions from staff?
And just to be clear, you made a motion to close the hearing. You may also want to consider closing the record.
Okay. We consider a motion to close the record as well.
I move that we close the record.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Commissioner Moe, seconded by Commissioner Nelson to close the record. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the record is closed. Deliberation, questions for staff?
I have a question. You mentioned that because of removal of the old reservoir site called Pit in here, that because that's going to damage the roots of the trees, and that's why a lot of those trees have to be removed. Is that true? Correct? I'm looking at this, I don't see that. In other words, you say a lot of the trees on the site have to be removed. This is clear on the south side of the site where you're going to put the 3 million gallon pad, and that's pretty open. Now, are the trees on the north side of this site going to be affected by this? In other words, we haven't seen the plan of where the trees are going, so I'm not not trying to think we're taking them all out, but it sounded like we're taking a lot of them out.
Yeah, I believe there's 66 trees identified to be removed from the site, 58 of which are on top of the hill, and 8 of which are on this north slope, which leads down to properties to the north and also to South 6th Street.
Out of an inventory, how many?
Pardon me?
Out of how many total?
I think there was 130 trees on the site.
That's
what, so, that's correct.
I can't believe I'm here fighting for trees, by the way. Just in the way I go, I am concerned about some of that impact.
Okay. The staff is reviewing the tree felling permit under separate cover, as well as the site plan review. It has been, was sent out for public comment. The applicant, as I mentioned, is proposing to remove 68 trees. They're proposing to replace 38 trees. I believe of the 66 to be removed, there is, I'd have to remember the proportion, but it's mostly deciduous trees are being removed, maples, oaks, cherries, pear trees, and then there's some holly and cedar that have been identified removal. The proportion of trees to be replaced are more coniferous than deciduous. They're about 3/4 coniferous. So in the long term, there will be more permanent foliage on the site rather than seasonal leaf growth on the site. And as Mr. Satry mentioned, it will be on the perimeter of the site. With the storm we had, the ice storm we had in February, there was a lot of tree removal done in this area of Springfield in general. So I believe, and I guess I can't speak for Springfield Utility Board, but I'm sure that they are cognizant of having large mature trees in the middle of their, you know, water reservoir operating site. So that, where you're looking at the cedar trees, where it says Central Boulevard on the diagram immediately to the right-hand side of that, that's where the new access driveway is going to come down, and so it requires this entire site to be regraded, the excavation pit from the old reservoir to be filled and sloped appropriately to allow for that. And that's one of the reasons why the trees have been identified for removal. It's site recontouring. There are some trees along the south boundary as well, where there's an existing pit. That area also is going to be graded to accommodate the future tank. So that is the rationale that's been provided to staff for the tree removal.
For the tree felling permit, there is a time for a public comment?
That's correct.
Question. Okay, then that's hopefully, if you're really concerned, you can go to that and talk to them about
okay,
that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, staff will follow up with the respondent for tonight's public hearing to provide all information and answer questions if necessary.
I'm good.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, any further questions?
Gentlemen, look like a man with a question.
No.
No?
Okay. All right. So, final discussion. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, no, I feel that Sub is very responsible in the community, and I trust them that they're going to do a good job. And I feel like all the criteria has been met, and I've got no issues with any of it.
Okay, other comments? Okay, hearing none, I would certainly entertain a motion.
Yeah, based on the staff reports and reviewing the application, I move to approve TYP314-00003, the discretionary use of the new 3 million gallon water reservoir for map 17-03-35-34, tax lot 7100, and map 18-03-02-12, tax lot 301, and map 18-03-02-21, tax lot 100.
Okay. Motion on the floor.
Second.
Commissioner Vose. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay. Abstentions? Okay. Unanimous. All right. The second item we have on our agenda tonight is another public hearing. This is also quasi-judicial, so the same legal issues apply. Declarations of potential conflicts of interest or disclosure of ex parte communication. This particular issue is related to an applicant request for discretionary use approval of an existing building at 6452 A Street and an adjoining parcel that is vacant and not assigned a municipal address. So we'll begin with the declaration of potential conflicts and disclosure of ex parte communication.
I have no considerations.
As part of the
Okay. Hearing none, we'll move forward with the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. The second site that's subject to a discretionary use request is in the Thurston neighborhood. It's just to the north of Main Street. It's off of A Street, just between 64th Place and 65th Place. The site is an existing residential care facility. It was designed as a 15-bed residential care facility. Currently, I believe it operates with 11 beds occupied. The east half of the property was left vacant as a result of a decision in 1996 when this site was developed. The building exceeded the allowable lot coverage under the development code. The site was left vacant and represented essentially the balance of open space required for the property. The applicant is now requesting to construct on the east half of the property. They have submitted a site plan review and a property line adjustment that would move the boundary between the two adjoining properties slightly in order to make the west existing site conforming with the site coverage. They're proposing to construct a 10-bed, approximately 3,500 square foot residential care facility. Both of the facilities would share staffing and amenities, and as a result, they're viewed as one development site with two buildings. At build out, the facility would be up to 25 beds, and under the provisions of the city's development code, residential care facilities in the low density residential district that have more than 15 people or have availability for more than 15 occupants require discretionary use. Just give you a couple of pictures for context, just north of Main Street. And it's in an existing residential neighborhood. There's a transition to the south between medium density residential and low density residential to the north. So there's a number of multi-unit facilities, multi-unit residential complexes between Main and A Street. There's a series of duplexes immediately to the west of this site. And then to the north and to the east, it's predominantly single family homes. And you can see by the zoning, it represents, it's right across the street from medium density residential zoning. Just give a couple of pictures of the site. The top pictures are of the existing facility, which is essentially like a large residential home. It's staff view it as being innocuous. It wasn't really noticeable or on anyone's radar until this application came in. When we did a site visit, there's a couple vehicles parked there for their employees. None of the residents drive, and none of the residents in the future facility would be drivers. And that's the nature of the care facility that's proposed for the site, is that they are non-drivers, likely not particularly ambulatory in the neighborhood as well. So any vehicles inbound to the site would be employees and occasional visitors as well. So the applicant has proposed to provide a couple of additional parking spaces, use the on-site on-street parking, and develop the east half of the property with this care facility, and therefore is requesting the discretionary use permit in order to proceed with site plan review and the property line adjustment to make two conforming adjoining residences that form this complex. And again, the applicant is here this evening and likely be able to give more project details, but staff is of the view that the applicant has met the criteria for discretionary use approval, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Okay. Any questions? Yes.
A couple of things. One, have you had any communication as a result of the notification process?
No, staff has not received any response to either the public hearing notice or any of the accompanying land use notifications for their site plan review, which is also sent out. There's been no telephone calls and no one's come into the office. There have been for the sub one, which we just dealt with, but there has been no response.
And the second question is, considering that previously the existing facility did not meet lot coverage requirements and the adjustment to the lot line, which I presume would be to the east, would that mean now that the 3,500 foot expansion, is that also going to be conforming to lot?
That's correct, and that's one of the reasons why the proposed facility on the east side is slightly smaller than the existing building. The lots right now are essentially symmetrical. They're virtually identical in area, 0.2 acres. And so the west half with the existing building will be slightly larger. And as you pointed out, on the east portion of the site, which is now going to be slightly less than half, not as large a facility can be constructed. So they will be building a conforming facility on the west, or the east half. And so that's why it's a 10-bed facility. Up to 15, but now currently operating as 11 on the west, so they're not exactly mirror image, but very close.
All right, thank you.
Okay, other questions? Okay, thank you. All right, so we have testimony from the applicant. We also have a request to speak from the applicant, Mark Kincaid. Would you like to come up and just speak to them? Please state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name is Mark Kincaid. My address is 611 North Cloverleaf Loop in Springfield. And I'm currently the owner of McKenzie Living, and I'm also an owner at Gateway Living in Springfield. We've been in Springfield since 1991. We employ about 170 local people on our staff at Gateway Living. We will employ about 25 to 30 at McKenzie Living. We expect, currently our at Gateway Living, we have about $4.5 million in payroll a year going to local residents. We'll have about $1.4 million a year in payroll coming out of McKenzie Living. We'll be serving a population that's greatly underserved in the state of Oregon. We responded to a request for a provider put out by the Department of Human Services earlier this year asking for somebody to do this just such a project, and I applied to do that and was awarded that contract. And so we sought property. We wanted to stay local in the area that we've been in operating in for a lot of years. And Mike Hudman, who's my business partner, and I went out and looked at this property and worked with Rick Satry and others to try and figure out whether or not we could actually make this happen. And it's been a little bit of a process, but we're happy to do it, and we're excited to be able to provide this service to the residents we'll serve and to apply, or be able to employ more local residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We have a second request to address the commission. This is a neutral request. Barbara Sward.
Chair,
please.
The applicant's representative wants to speak.
Oh, you don't get to speak.
You know?
Oh, I guess.
No,
I guess.
Commissioner,
in this case.
Thank you. This one last time. Commissioner, if you've heard me too often, I understand. I really do, but so I'll try and be brief, which is always a challenge. As staff indicated, and as Mr. Kincaid indicated, that when we discovered this property in East Springfield, there are two identical tax lots. One of them, the west one, is occupied with about a 4,500 square foot building that was issued a building permit in 1996. For whatever reason at the time, it was issued a permit, but then it was discovered that it would be non-compliant with respect to building coverage on the lot. And so the eastern lot was bound, joined at the hip to the western lot to make up that coverage deficit. So the strategy that we're employing is we're with the property line adjustment. The western tax lot will grow so that 4,500 square foot building will meet the 45% maximum footprint coverage. And then because the eastern lot shrinks, then we don't want to exceed the 45% maximum lot coverage, so it's only gonna be about a 3,500 square foot 10-bed facility. And as staff indicated, because we're one development site serving a population of more than 15 in the low-density residential zone, discretionary use is a requirement, hence we're here before you. Also, as staff indicated, we have underway, concurrent with your consideration of the discretionary use, site plan review, which included public notice and the property line adjustment. We're happy to facilitate the applicant making additional investments in the Springfield community. We're thrilled that through some creative land use planning, we're actually going to bring both tax lots into compliance with the lot coverage requirement. So with that, I can go sit down. If you've got any questions, we're here. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, so at this point, we'll ask Barbara Sword to step forward. She has a neutral position on this. State your name, please, and your address.
Barbara Sword, I'm at 415 North 64th Street, Springfield. I've lived there for 37 years and watched all this stuff go behind me up to almost Main Street. You're right, the building there has been very invisible. It's not intrusive to the neighborhood. My concern with building another 10 is the number of people coming in and out, employees, where they're going to park. Also, we see ambulances, paramedics, firemen, you know, every time somebody comes, coming in, and the traffic there, which is necessary. The other part of that is the road between 64th and 65th Place is breaking up. And I'm concerned with the extra traffic that we will have, which just already exists, and the new place, the new 10 rooms, that we're going to need some more work done out there. And that's my main concerns.
So, question for staff. Is there any proposed street improvements? Was traffic a consideration through the land use?
Traffic was a consideration, particularly parking. And so the applicant submitted a parking demand management plan. And so among the strategies they're looking at is incentivizing non-single occupant vehicle travel for employees to the site. If you go due south of this site, down, I think it's 64th Street, which is a cul-de-sac. There's a walkway right at the end, and there's a bus stop right there. So the Thurston number 11 bus, which is one of the most frequent in the whole metro area, it provides good service up and down Main Street. There is a possibility for incentivizing public transit use for employees, and so that's one of the strategies that the applicant is proposing.
That's on 64th Place.
Sorry, 64th Place. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, there's a right at the end
walkway,
of the walkway. There's a walkway that connects there, so it's within a block essentially of a public transit stop, so it's, you know, it's close and accessible. The other is to ensure that if the city will be doing monitoring, so if there are complaints about excessive vehicle parking on the street, they are proposing to use portions of their site frontage for on-street parking, which is no different than, you know, someone's house on the site. However, beyond that, the parking spaces that are proposed on the site, which I believe is about 8 parking spots, those will be utilized to on-street, and anything beyond that would need to be monitored to make sure that it's not going to be intrusive to the neighborhood. So that's the parking issue. Regarding traffic, the condition of the street, I guess, is a pre-existing situation. If the city needs to look at repairs, street maintenance, that would be, I guess, an incremental contribution of this site, but also everyone else in the neighborhood, including multifamily residential to the south. As the applicant has indicated to staff, the amount of vehicle trips to the site is actually very low considering the number of residents, because none of them have cars and they don't drive. And that is also going to be a binding obligation on the site into the future, is that none of the residents will be able to have cars at the site and park. And as Mr. Kincaid indicated, that's one of the, I guess it's a niche or specialty type of care that they're providing for, you know, non-drivers. So that's another consideration, is that it will be merely employees, you know, parking at the site. So they will come for a shift, you park for a period of time and leave. There won't be constant flow of traffic. There may be occasional visitors, possibly emergency response as well, due to the nature of the facility, I guess. So staff will, I guess, take it under advisement as far as the street repairs that might be necessary, but it is a fully improved street. It has curb and gutter, sidewalks, street trees. They're proposing to utilize existing driveway curb cuts for their parking. And there are really no other obligations on the developer at this point for their portion of the street frontage.
Okay. Yes, Commissioner Moe?
The transport vehicles are large. You know, like, I'll use ambulances as an example. And unfortunately, there's probably a lot of that traffic that comes and goes. They're not going to be parked there, but it's going to be, I don't know how often it is, but more often than there is one, I know that. But how is that going to be considered in this?
I don't think that the burden
coming in, if it's a 911 call, you got sirens and everything. I mean, this happens all the time. It has to happen. But how is it being thought of in protection to the home?
Safety.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're looking at, it has definitely has good access to the site. The conditions of the streets, I think, are a separate and distinct issue. And I think staff would be hard pressed to identify that this site has contributed any more than any others to wear and tear on the road system, because the applicant may point out that school bus is also, you know.
And I understand, but I really wasn't speaking to that. I know it's within specifications and the rigs that are on it, but I'm thinking about noise and size and parking and moving in and out, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is it really going to be a lot, or am I just sort of overdoing it?
I don't know the nature of it. You know, it's not a hospital, it's not a medical care, it's a residence for a congregate care facility.
But they don't drive for a reason there.
Correct. And I guess proportionally speaking, there may be a greater number of ambulance responses than your average single family home or apartment complex. But I guess it would be difficult to quantify and not germane to the issue tonight with the discretionary use. You know, street improvement, street condition is a factor of time and traffic. And so occasional emergency responses, which are noticeable and definitely noisy, versus all the day-to-day traffic of everyone else pulling out of other sites, it's something that we're not tracking.
I live in Glenwood on Henderson Avenue, Midway Manor down there. 55 and over. That's pretty heavily used EMTs down here. Job security for a lot of those guys.
And Commissioner Moe, it's my understanding that staff will consider that there's adequate access for emergency vehicles, but it wouldn't be appropriate to consider whether there's too much access of emergency vehicles.
That's criteria.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. Do we have any rebuttal or anything else from the applicant? Okay. All right, so at this time, if we have no more questions for staff, I would consider a motion for closing the public hearing and closing the public record.
A motion that we close the public hearing and record.
Okay.
Two for one. I'll second that.
I was wondering if I could get away with that. It's just fine.
Yeah. So, moved by Commissioner Bean, seconded by Commissioner Moe to close the public hearing and public record. Okay, so at this time, further discussion?
No, the lady that spoke wasn't for it or against it. She was just neutral. So I'm hoping that she feels a little bit better. But we are concerned that she's comfortable in the long run. She's lived there a long time. I've seen things change out there a lot.
Okay. So I would certainly consider a motion.
Based on the reviewing the staff report and the conditions for a conditional use, a discretionary use approval, I approve TYP 313-00004, discretionary use request for a 25-bed residential care facility at 6452 A Street, map 17-02-34-42, tax lot 3900 and 4000.
Okay. So there's a motion on the floor to approve as presented.
Seconded.
Can we vote on closing the hearing and the?
They did.
We did.
Did.
Yeah, I heard the motion, but I didn't hear a vote.
We did not.
Oh, we did not vote. We got sidetracked. You're right.
You did.
Good catch, Brenda.
Thank you.
We did that two for one thing.
I know. And Steve seconded.
So all in favor of closing the hearing and the public
record,
signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? No. There's a motion on the floor to approve as proposed. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion by Commissioner Nelson, a second by Commissioner Kirschman to approve the recommendation as presented. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. At this time, we have some updates to catch up on. I have an update from May 5th. But I think that, looking back, much of this has been reviewed in subsequent. Why don't we start the most recent? Who has gone to the most recent council meeting?
Yesterday.
Last night.
Okay, so let's start there and then we'll backfill.
Usually I go there prepared to get information report. Last night I didn't, but most of it was pretty much general council action, except the controversy on the house on 18th Street, the Springfield the Drug House. Mm-hmm. There was a substantial amount of people there last night to testify. their concerns about how the city's handling and how they can get rid of them. And a lot of those people want to do retroactive actions, which I don't think we can do, but the chief of police spoke, and the city is sensitive to their issues, and I suppose in our proper way, we'll address them and hope that problem goes away. And that was pretty much the big deal last night. 18th Street.
It's like about five blocks in.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the week prior, Tuesday, after the holiday, and it was just a work session, but some facts that came out, MWMC had a PowerPoint presentation, and just some facts that maybe none of you know, was really interesting, but they have a capacity out there at the River Avenue of 277 million gallons a day to clean and go to the river and then it comes in. They average about 30 million gallons a day. But at a high event, like a 60-year event, they've had 230 million gallons a day go through that. So they still have quite a bit of room. But our wastewater fees from SUD will be going up probably 3% this year. Haven't raised it for several years. So and it's very minimal, you know, about the few. But they are looking at possibly a flat rate, just kind of split on that. And one last thing that they are discussing was our urban growth. They were looking at Gateway, City Loop. There's about two or three that they're really interested in pushing. And yeah, but the floodplain is the thing that they kind of, we had a guy there that was explaining that. The floodplain, we do have a development overlay, but it is very restrictive. But you saw Peace Health, what they did, they were able to do it, so it is doable.
I don't want to stay in the basement when we have a flood out there.
But that's basically just of what the work session was on.
The work session I attended on the 5th was also much about the annexation pieces, much of what you talked about.
UGB.
Others, do we have any other reports?
I don't have mine with me. My mom was having surgery, so I got a little distracted today. But it was a work session. It was in regard to the UGB, too. I can bring my notes. I just didn't have my notes with me tonight.
That'll go on and on.
Yeah.
Kevin Coe did talk at the work session that I attended in regard to CDBG HUD action plan. And this is a final year, our five-year plan. And it looks like funding is relatively stable. He said CDBG was going to be decreased by around 7%, and the HUD dollars were going to increase some, so it should be kind of a wash, which is good. And basically, the rest was in regard to annexation. So. Okay.
On a personal note, my seat on the commission is up. And I initially submitted an application, but I have now withdrawn that application for a variety of reasons. And so there would be an open seat. Part of it is, and I think Steve reported on this, or somebody did when it happened, is the city council has made a policy, and they adopted the policy this January, to give preferential treatment to non-elected officials. And so they when they didn't have any other applicants besides myself, they put it back out to the community.
I'm not sure, maybe Brenda can speak to that process. I don't know if they adopted a policy to give preference.
They did.
Yeah, we have cut.
It's in the city council.
Okay.
I have that policy.
Okay.
I think I was at the council meeting when that topic came up, and I originally reported on it.
I remember they discussed it, I didn't know they adopted it.
A suggestion, and I didn't.
Yeah, I thought it was a discussion, not adoption.
Because there was an awful lot of people that realized that that had more impact than they realized.
Yeah.
Because of all the different boards that are elected officials.
Okay.
I've got a copy of it.
Okay, that's fine. And then I think, but Brenda can also speak to you, there's a general policy when there's only one applicant to repost. So that's actually the reason why it was reposted.
Right.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether it's an incumbent or not?
Yes.
That policy hadn't been in practice in previous times, but, you know, it is what it is. So, and I also think that it's fine for somebody else to step onto the commission and continue to bring new folks in Springfield into being part of civic service.
Well, my thought is that there's plenty of opportunities. It doesn't necessarily mean excluding an incumbent and an experienced person. And I think that's part of what the council was talking about when they had that session. There were a lot of people that felt that it was preferential to have experience as opposed to somebody that didn't know what was going on and had to get up to speed to it. So there was two points of view for sure. Mm-hmm.
I really like a mix is what I kind of...
Well, there's no reason you can't have both. Because there are lots of opportunities.
Well, we were talking, and, you know, I think we have four commission seats that will be coming up within the next several months.
We just have one additional one this year, and that would be yours.
Yeah. But then there are two...
October.
Two additional...
Early in 2015.
Correct. January, Stacy, February, Johnny.
Yeah.
Stacy can reapply. Johnny's will reach his term.
8-year term.
Your first 8-year term.
You can go out and come back, John. Like Steve's done. How many times?
I've been here 20 years, and I think he's been off 1 year. Maybe.
So, maybe.
You haven't thrown me off yet.
So. Okay, well, you know, I think, you know, it's good to get some new folks. We've had some turnover on the Planning Commission, and, you know, but I also think that it takes some time to really get up to speed and be effective on the Planning Commission as well. It really does. So I think it's important to have a good mix.
I'm beginning to think that you never really are completely up to speed on
everything. No, never are.
Always a learning curve.
Yeah. And I look at it as a training ground for those that want to run for council someday. Mm-hmm. I think everybody on council should have gone through this, not all of them do. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Good part of the process.
Okay. The other thing that I would report is that we are scheduled on June 9th. There will be a presentation at the council work session on Monday, June 9th, in relation to the work that we've done as a CCI related to the compensation. And so that is scheduled. So just an FYI. Okay?
I have something here that will be interesting to you people. I've had it for several weeks. I got to pass it around before I lose it. This, when the legislature passed the Willamette Greenway regulations, they ran these maps down the Willamette River all over. We didn't know what the hell it was. Excuse me for that. And
I won't put it in a minute.
And it was actually, when I looked at that and wondered what was going on, it was one of the things that stimulated my interest in getting in the planning process, see what was going on, how this was going to affect. But this is a drawing in Glenwood when Mermo was doing their property over there, where the Willamette Greenway boundary was, they thought it was at that time. I'm going to pass it around here.
What year is that, Steve?
That is 1928. 1976. The Greenway boundary is on the south side of Franklin Boulevard.
On the south side?
South side of Franklin Boulevard. And when we looked at that, we thought,
what kind of restrictions are we under? What's going on here? And they were talking about, now it's much closer to the river, but actually it wanders all over different areas, but.
Interesting. Keep that document at home.
Is that before they built the dam?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been.
Seventy-six. Dam was built 54.
Yes, this was, I thought you said this was from.
No, I'm joking.
Oh, you were joking.
He said 10, I said 10.
Do we have any other business?
Yep, one other question, staff. You mentioned during both of these hearings tonight of public response to telephone calls. And one of them, you said they had none. But at the same time, you mentioned on the previous issue, you had some phone calls. I don't remember you mentioning those during your speaking to us.
We had, for the sub-site, we had email sent in response to the tree felling notification.
Yeah.
And we had a phone call, and the applicant, or the respondent had indicated that they were intending to come to tonight's meeting. Actually, we had two phone calls. One of them was from a resident to the north of Quarry Road.
I'm not worried.
The other was this gentleman here, so he did.
I'm not worried about that now, but I think it's important to know those things.
Absolutely.
They actually give us a little something, something that may be rumbling out there.
Okay.
Is it in staff reporting?
I don't think so, because the responses were to subsequent notifications, not the public hearing notifications. So it was more recent than when the staff report had been compiled. So no, probably not. Other than the information I mentioned about the sub-site with the phone calls we have received. But there has been no response for any of the license applications for the site in Thurston that we were looking at the second time around. So one of the two respondents was here tonight to testify. And the other one, who had indicated they're going to be here for the hearing, obviously did not come. But they have provided comments for the written record for the tree felling decision and the site plan review. So those will be incorporated into that. So.
And which were not part of this.
Correct. They were specific to some of the technical details of the site development, not the question of whether they should exist there or not. So.
Okay.
One last one. Greg Ma.
Yes.
All these studies of the floodplain. Seems like after we did the first one, what has changed to make subsequent studies different?
I think there have been.
Did the ground raise or lower or something?
I think there have been these isolated lomars that have occurred. Wildish did one. Peace Health did one. And because FEMA and CORE accepted that new data, they recognized that the basis for those 64 and 68 and 72 updates that have occurred was no longer an accurate representation of where the floodplain was. So they've undertaken this new analysis.
I can't figure out what's changed. And all I know is it costs us a lot of money and holds a lot of things out.
Well, yeah, and I think we're not even actually aware of what the ultimate cost of the new analysis and the new standards may be, particularly if we have to include in our plan an analysis of the potential take that would occur for any development that occurs in the floodplain. I mean, the anything. So somebody just gets an LDAP permit. We won't be able to process that unless there's a positive finding with respect to the habitat. So
yeah, that one too.
Yeah. You know, the channel can change a little. The hydraulics of the water movement can move the channel around, but that's
really that's about all, because the ground is not rising or lowering. The oceans maybe, but you know, we're not.
That gravel bar off Island Park did not exist years ago. That's all. Slowly it came over the years.
Well, you remember all the work we had to do out of the channel with those cats at the mouth of the of the mill race for years. We had to do that to keep water in there.
The river was lowering, eroding. Okay, so I guess it was. And so the inlet of the mill race was getting higher and higher. So every year we'd go out there with a bulldozer and open up that channel. Well, got to where we couldn't do that because of violent damage, so.
We moved the opening.
We built the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you were damned if you didn't, and if you didn't, because there was habitat in the mill race. So we had to keep the water going in there to keep that habitat vital. And
okay. So Commissioner Vose, you had one more?
Yeah, in regard to the greenway setback, we've had a couple of hearings over the last couple of years on establishing a greenway setback line, I think Wileash and at Shamrock.
Yes.
And I realize and since these applications seem to occur randomly, I realize that probably anyone that's applying for an establishment of a line is probably looking at the same criteria, but they may interpret it differently. How important is it for the greenway line to align from one property line to the next?
Well, you know, you'd think that it would have to, but it may not have to. There could be something that occurs at the property line that is a significant criteria of the greenway setback determination. And it could be artificial or it could be natural, that at that property line there could be something that requires a setback to be considered going closer to the river or going farther away from the river. The actual changes that might occur in Glenwood based on the criteria to determine what it is probably not very likely. So I would suspect that you would see a pretty uniform setback along the riverfront. When you consider the features that we use to determine where that is, it's usually at the top of the bank, and then it's inland from the top of the bank a certain distance. With respect to vegetative cover or other natural features that are there. But you know, if you're 5 feet past the top of the bank, there's a parking lot. It's not going to go beyond the parking lot if it even goes there. And so you could have a property that's relatively natural and has some features that you want to incorporate in the setback. And the adjoining property could have pavement at that same point. So we wouldn't see, there's no reason just because the adjoining property has a setback at 50 feet that the next one should have that too if it's a parking lot. No point in doing that. So it would come down along that property line.
Is it a possibility that staff, if an applicant had a misalignment, would suggest an adjustment? Or they simply oppose it or allow it as it stands?
Well, I'm not exactly.
Well, in other words, an applicant comes in and the adjoining property has established line. And theirs is in variance at the property line. Mm-hmm. Would staff potentially suggest an adjustment to make an alignment?
I don't think so. No, once it's established, the basis for its establishment was validated at the hearing and the facts were justified where it was. So I don't think we'd ever come back on that person and say, you need to change it one way or another, either closer to the river or farther.
Well, I mean, at the time that the application is made before the hearing.
Well, again, you know, I hope that the facts on the property are going to be sufficient to justify whatever the recommended setback is. It, you know, it's just because of those circumstances that exist in Glenwood, your you're hardly ever going to see anything that's much past the top of the bank, just because there's been so much use of that land that there's hardly anything there on most of those properties that represents a riparian, a natural riparian environment that qualifies under the greenway goals for protection in that setback.
When I was growing up in Glenwood, there were rows of houses along the river. And as we flooded, the riverbank went south. Those houses are gone. And where the bank you see now is as after 1953 with the, when the dam went in, it quit happening. But where I lived, it was sort of a family saying that eventually the river would get to us and we'd be gone. Because it happened in places along there.
Well, you know, we had a little celebration out there for at the pizza parlor.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed how wide the river is there. I mean, it looks like a very substantial, I mean, it's almost like what I'm used to on the Willamette River is a fairly narrow channel, especially in the summertime, but that looks like it's about its widest point right there, anywhere in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like it used to be there were exposed rocks and stuff over on the north side.
Well, all the stuff where Roaring Rapids is now was washed downstream. We were in the sand and gravel business, and all that gravel ended up in streets in Eugene and Springfield. And that's where it stopped.
Free of charge.
No. I think we paid the Corps of Engineers for those fees. Not much. Nowadays, you go to jail for it. But back then, that was the accepted way.
So one other thing. I have been talking with Greg briefly about triple bottom line analysis. And I have a sheet based on presentation that I was part of that was done actually for the chamber group, one of the chamber classes. And so if you're not familiar with triple bottom line, it has to do with environmental health, economic prosperity, and social equity. Those are the three pieces, and how that might, that process might apply to some of the decisions that we make in relation to land use. And so anyway, that's something maybe for a future work session that we'll have for discussion. Okay? All right. We are adjourned.
Yeah, he has them to sign.
Okay.
Thank you. I think it's okay. I forget it doesn't just fit for the process, it fits anything.